Good evening, boys and girls. We're back with another podcast. I guess those baseball games they played, but
there was a World
Series. That was uninteresting.
This is Jeff. That's Matthew.
Oh, yeah. Right. In case any of you continue to get confused.
This is what we sound like. And the World Series happens at the last podcast, but I see no reason to acknowledge that happened, so let's move right on to the Cy Young.
Right. Which is somewhat related to the World Series in that, in my opinion, both should feature Cliff Lee. But only one of them is going to feature Cliff Lee, and that one already happened, so I guess I just screwed up my tense.
Yeah, that could have gone a lot better. I think the thing about, so we've been talking about the Cy Young off and on for a good amount of time, and obviously we prefer Felix, we want him to win, but you're going to have some fan bias in there because obviously we want some good to come out of the season. And I think you and I both agree that while we want Felix to win, and he has a very strong argument, you can make a strong argument for other guys, not Sabathia and Price, mind you, but guys like Lee, or Jared Weaver, who was very, very good, or Justin Verlander, who was very, very good. Felix doesn't have, I mean, relative to Sabathia and Price, I think he does have the best argument, and that's why I think he's going to win. But relative to the other guys, statistically, I don't think it's an open and shut case.
Correct. There's a lot of Felix's hands, you know, person, and if you can find voters seem to be talking about, which is Sabathia, Price, or Felix, I don't see any for Price or Sabathia over Felix. Really, the are wins, which are obvious. We don't even need to talk and refute about pitching wins as a metric. It's often the case how, you know, they pitched, Price and Sabathia pitched for winning teams or in the playoff hunt, ergo, you know, their games mattered more, and that's a lot more pressure. But I think, as we've addressed on more than one occasion, if anything, you face a lot more pressure pitching for the 2010 Mariners than you do for the 2010 Yankees or the 2010 Rays. When you know you have to go out there, and if you even give up half a run, you're screwed. I think that's a lot more pressure than when you have the Yankees lineup backing you up.
I think that's absolutely true, and it's weird because you hear people talk about, like, traditionally, you'll hear people talk about how there's not much pressure. There's way more pressure pitching for a team in the race, but then there's also the pressure of going out there and having to pitch perfectly, and when you're pitching for a team that isn't in the race, generally you do have to pitch perfectly. So I think there's an incongruity there. I really could have put that a lot better. But
I think it probably, to at least some extent, that it's worth not talking about ever again.
I think that's fair. When all else fails, just assume it's negligible. I think it's funny that we're talking about a Cy Young pool that will invariably come down to Felix, Sabathia, and Price. I don't think Price is really in the argument very much, and it seems to me, based on what we've heard, that Felix is the front runner. I think enough people have spoken that it seems like he'll get the majority of the votes. But it's funny because if you open this up to the fans, and maybe the more statistical friendly fans, it's a very different pool because Sabathia and Price wouldn't really be included towards the front. So you mentioned that you like Cliff Lee. So talk a little about why you think you prefer him to Felix.
Well, simply when it comes down to it, the pitching methods that I go by, which are basically encapsulated by Fangraphs WAR, you know, things like FIP and strikeout to walk ratio, home runs, ground ball percentage, you can go a little bit more with TRA or XFIP to try and control away some of the home run luck, especially for, you know, park factors of such with Cliff Lee in Texas. Cliff Lee comes out on top. He had the highest WAR of any pitcher in the American League this season. He was at 7. Felix was at, I think, 6.3. I believe even Verlander topped Felix again. Verlander also topped Felix last year. So you can't even claim that Felix deserves it for his 2009 to 2010 body of work, which was an argument I was prepared to make until I found out that Verlander beats him both years. So that kind of put a damper in that one. But you know, there's a lot of arguments to be made, especially when you're talking about the Cy Young and what constitutes the best pitcher. Because you can, I think you can make an argument that something like runs allowed matters. And I will disagree with you, but I won't say you're an idiot like I would if you said pitching wins matters. Mm-hmm. There is an argument to be made that it's not just about, you know, that like runs allowed encapsulates what actually happened to a degree. Mm-hmm. And whereas pitching independent or I'm sorry, fielding independent methods are more projection based. They're more trying to tell you, well, how good is this pitcher in a vacuum? But obviously pitchers don't pitch in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. Nothing happens in a vacuum. So, you know, there's, I guess, I can understand why some people would want to use things like ERA or, well, with ERA, they really should be using RA, but mm-hmm. neither here nor there. I don't agree with that. I think something like FIP or XFIP is the best way to determine who was the best pitcher, mm-hmm. because that's kind of what I care about is what's, who exhibited the best at repeatable and controllable pitching skills.
Yeah.
Who struck out the most batters, who missed the most bats, who hit the strike zone the most, who avoided walks, who kept the ball on the ground, who avoided home runs, who avoided line drives. Those are the types of things I look about. If we come up with a good way of like evaluating sequencing of hits to figure out, well, this guy was able to, you know, suppress his batting average on balls in play with runners in scoring position more. Like, there's a lot of talk about, I think, that's come up with Felix, how he really steps up his game in like clutch situations or with runners in scoring position and such. And, you know, I understand that argument, but to me, that doesn't tip the balance. I more said it's good, but I stick with the what I have confidence in, and that's FIP and XFIP.
I think,
and of those,
sorry,
it's Cliff Lee or it's Justin Verlander.
So the thing about, and you just hit on this, that I think a lot of people forget about the advanced stats, if you will, the FIP, the XFIP, whatever, is that it's not just supposed to be defense independent. It is also context independent. I think maybe that's the better way to put it. It's just a context independent statistic, and so you lose that. If somebody was better or worse with runners in scoring position, that's stripped out of the numbers. And if, I think it is worth consideration if a guy statistically was a lot better, like Felix, with men on base or with runners in scoring position, then whether or not that's repeatable, I think that's something to keep in mind. And it's for that reason that I think invariably, no matter who wins any award, I always end up most disappointed in the people who say that somebody was absolutely right or absolutely wrong, because seldom is there an absolutely right or wrong answer. I mean, you have to deal with park factors and how those influence pitchers individually. I mean, Safeco increases strikeouts by a pretty significant margin. Not too many people are talking about that with Felix. They talk about how maybe it influences ERA, but the strikeouts matter. Obviously, it suppresses home runs. It increases walks a little bit too, but it doesn't cancel out the strikeout increase. There's just so many things to keep in mind, and then you can argue, well, do we care about who has the best overall numbers? Do we care about who had the most overall good starts? Like, if somebody has a couple really, really bad games that spoiled his season line, do you take that, or do you take another guy who was the same for every start and had the exact same numbers? It gets complicated to the point where there's so much that I don't get very emotional about the awards, not necessarily, and not just because I don't care about most of them, but also because I can't get up in arms about something when I don't know for a fact that there's a right answer. Roy Halladay was the right answer yesterday, I think. That was pretty clear. Roy Halladay was the best pitcher in the National League. But something like this in the American League, I don't know. If they choose Sabathia, I think they got it wrong. But I don't know that Felix was right, and so I can't be too upset.
I hear what you're saying. I think what it comes down to is that it's not so much that there has to be a right answer, but I think there's a right group of answers,
mm-hmm.
At least to me. And if in the American League, if they gave it to Lee, Verlander, Felix, Weaver, or even Liriano, who was, by the way, amazing, and not a lot of people talk about him because he didn't throw enough innings, really, yeah. Through like 191 innings. But he was amazing in his 190 odd innings. Mm-hmm. I think he had like the second best FIP in the American League. I think if it went to either one of those five, I'd be like, you know, I preferred Lee, but I can't really, you know, and I could quibble with it going to somebody else, but I'm not going to be like, this is bullshit. what the hell is wrong with all of you people? You know, if it went to Sabathia, if it went to David Price, those are two that I'm like, well, that was stupid. those are wrong answers. I may not have the right answer, but I know those two are the wrong answers.
Yeah. I think it's funny. We showed several weeks ago that the Cy Young is supposed to go to the league's most outstanding pitcher. And then that's it. There are no qualifications. So you end up with things like, okay, Liriano threw very, very few innings. What if you had a guy, hypothetical guy, comes up, throws 10 innings of relief, perfect innings, no hits, no runs, no walks, no nothing. Technically, he was the most outstanding pitcher of the season, you could argue. Like, there's just so many different interpretations. If you wanted to be kind of a dick about it, you know, I think everybody obviously has a pretty clear understanding it should go to the guy who was the best for the longest or whatever. But, you know, if they gave it to, like, I don't know, somebody who was good for very, very, very little time, if they give it to that guy, I think it would be kind of funny. Like, okay, yeah.
Like when Gagne won it in 2003? Or are you talking even less innings?
No, I mean even less. Just somebody who was like a standout September call-up. Like Francisco Rodriguez, his rookie year. You remember when he was just good for a month? Like, okay, right. Yeah, that's kind of funny. Because, yeah, the Cy Young's so fucked up. This guy technically has an argument because he was so outstanding for a week. Or then you could do the Ryan Roland Smith outstanding because he did stand out. Let me tell you, he was awful. He was absolutely awful. He was the most outstanding pitcher in baseball. I know I made that joke before, but it bears repeating. Maybe this is why legal contracts get so detailed, because there are assholes like me who find these little loopholes, and you can't just say most outstanding pitcher, because it turns out outstanding has multiple definitions. Some of them are bad. Like, yeah. Exceptional. If I say, hey, Matthew, you know, I think you're an exceptional writer. You don't know if that's a compliment. You're just the exception to something.
Right. It goes both ways. And yep. Yeah. People don't really acknowledge that.
Just like Ichiro.
Often.
So I think that pretty much covers the Cy Young, and I think this will be posted. Do you have more?
No, I was just going to say the Ichiro thing threw me off my track.
I think that pretty much covers the Cy Young. Hopefully this goes up before the Cy Young results come out. If you're listening to this after the Cy Young award comes out, congratulations! That'll be dubbed.
Mr. Black.
Atlanta Falcons.
Oh, I guess the other thing I want to say is that, like, even if Sabathia or Price do win, and you know, it's clearly a wrong choice, I just don't quite get why people are so emotional about these things, like the MVP or the Cy Young. It's just, it's a subjective award. I mean, you might as well get pissed about All-Star voting still. It's a subjective award. That, yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, I get the, we're sad for Felix because Felix cares. But I guess, like, you know, like, be sad for Felix. Like, oh, that sucks. But whatever. It's just, I don't understand anger as a response. Mm-hmm. It just, it doesn't affect you. It doesn't affect you in the slightest. There's no way you out there, the listener, are affected by this. Unless you choose to be affected. And that is really easily remedied.
I wonder how many people would end up actually mad as opposed to acting mad because they think it's appropriate.
Well, I don't know. I don't know where the line is anymore. So, you know, people, the world has enough anger. Stop acting mad if you don't actually feel mad. There's too much out there already.
You know, sometimes it's okay to be like, well, all right. And just have that be a response. You don't need to feel everything. Come on. This is the 90s almost. Be unfeeling. This is the defining characteristic of our generation, isn't it?
World it was supposed to be. It used to be. And then now it's the everybody has to have an opinion. Yeah. Which, just if you think about it, wow, that took 180 degrees. Or, as we joked about, that is a pie turn.
Radian's joke. Yesterday I made my second ivory piano keyboard joke in 3 days, which is a record by two.
You want to go for three out of four?
No.
Okay. Well think about it. Maybe you'll get one later. So yeah, but wasn't that supposed to be, weren't we the apathy generation?
Yeah.
Or is that like 3 years older than us? I don't know. I don't really know where generations go, but I feel like we were the early 90s, kind of like the whatever generation, you know, the Nirvana grunge. Who cares, man?
I think maybe all those calls for our generation to become more politically active worked and didn't work because they inspired us to get really, really opinionated, except we decided, well, we don't actually care about politics, but we care about, you know, Lady Gaga. And
well, yeah, I mean, it's what I actually think. It depends on your definition of a generation. I don't think that's our generation. I think the whatever they call that, the MTV generation, generation Y or Z or X or I don't know. I think that is really, I think we straddle the border, you and I, mm-hmm. being the ages that we are. I think that generation is really kind of more our age to our age plus five. Mm-hmm. And I think the, oh my God, I have to insta react to everything. And it doesn't even not only does it have to be instant reactions, but it has to be extreme reactions one way or the other, black or white, and instantly black or white. I really feel like that's kind of like our age to 5 years younger. Well, probably a lot more than 5 years, but I try to interact very little with people under the age of 20.
So maybe the apathy was the generation in front of us, and then we are just responding to our older brothers by reacting opposite.
Yeah, that's what I think it is. I think it's the older brother, younger brother syndrome of this kind of whole current generation that's between 20 and 30.
Well, I think the older generation has it right. Stop caring so much.
I think they more have it right, yes. Care about things, but care about things that matter. And you know, take
in
the
short,
time.
In short, don't read sports blogs.
Yeah. Well, sports can matter, but it's, you know, have an informed opinion. If you're going to be angry, anger should come from somewhere. It shouldn't just be reactions.
I guess they need to just come into the whole argument about how maybe if sports are just an outlet for so many people, they don't need to be informed. They don't want to be informed. And well, you and I obviously think that's ridiculous because this is a big part of what we do and we strive to inform people. And it is incredibly frustrating when people act uninformed despite all of our instruction. However, I understand that for some people, sports are what they do after work. They just want to open up 17 beers and just sit on the couch, slap their wife, and watch a basketball game. And, you know, if those people just want to complain about how somebody traveled, I am out of my basketball terminology after traveling, then, you know, that's fine. It's just on our particular website, that's going to run into some obstacles because that's not what we're about. But I understand it, and I can't be too mad about it because ultimately, sports don't matter. And this is getting too existential for me.
Well, you know, and I agree with it because there are certain sports, I mean, like football and even to an extent hockey, I react the same way. I don't want to have to think about it. Mm-hmm. I just want to watch it and react, and that's kind of my outlet to things. But I think there's a step two in that, which is that I realize that I just want an emotional release. And so what I don't do is then go on hockey blogs or football blogs and act like I know things about sports.
Good point. All right, that's fair. So if you aren't informed, don't pretend that you're informed.
Right, just like as if you're not angry, don't pretend you're angry.
Stop pretending. It makes it difficult to get to know you.
Yes.
It's so hard for me to approach strangers. I don't need diversions and make-believe. I just want to get closer to you. So do we want to say anything about the World Series?
Go yay Giants.
Yeah, yay Giants. It was fun to watch the Rangers get there, and then it was fun to watch them lose. It was fun to watch them lose on home field, and it was exhilarating to watch Cliff Lee lose to Edgar Renteria. By the way, And I think there's a huge lesson you can learn that, of course, people won't learn from the whole Cliffley experience, that the unbeatable ace, unbeatable rental ace that the Rangers picked up lost both his starts in the World Series. It doesn't matter that he was very, very good in the second start, because over a sample size of one game, that doesn't matter because Lincecum was better. And you know what? Jonathan Sanchez could have been better that day. It wouldn't have mattered. If Todd Wellemeyer made the Giants roster and were still on the Giants when he made the roster, he could have pitched better. It doesn't matter. Just that one, it'll come up again next year with whoever the ace is of the week. But, I wish there would be no more declarations about series or games or players for just such limited displays.
People putting too much confidence in things that are obviously too subjected to variance.
Like, when Roy Halladay threw his no-hitter to start the playoffs, I think I and, like, a ton of other people said, oh, well, Roy Halladay just threw a no-hitter, and you could totally see it coming from the third inning. You feel it. You always feel it when you see a guy throw really well. I've felt it with Felix before. Ultimately, whenever you feel that, 99% of the time, of course, it doesn't happen. And then you just write it because it conveys an idea, and it says how dominant the pitcher looked. But nobody actually would have put money, nobody smart would have put money on Roy Halladay in the third inning that he was going to throw a no-hitter. Because you understand, I feel one way, but it's irrational. People felt one way about, say, Cliff Lee and how dominant he was, but it became irrational when they decided, you know what, this guy's unbeatable, especially considering he was going up against Tim Lincecum, who's a very, very good pitcher, by the way, in case you'd missed that notice. Maybe it's because people get tired of saying this guy's really good, and then they just have to get louder and more emphatic about it, which, of course, sort of touches on what we were talking about before. But, you know, it's important to understand the limitations of what we have.
It is. And that's all I have to say about that.
So the Mariners made two signings on Wednesday by the names of Sean Casmore and Justin Miller. What we know about Sean Casmore is that he's bad and white and small, and Justin Miller is decent and old, and, well, there's white underneath the ink sleeves. We didn't have to talk about Casmore because he's absolutely terrible. He showed up.
Are we even sure that's how you say his name?
Casmore? Casmore?
Well, I think you just said it two different ways. Casmore and Casmore.
More? No, there's no O.
Yeah, I know there's no O, but that's what it sounded like. It's how it sounded like you said it the first time.
Well, you know what? Ultimately, it doesn't matter how we pronounce his name because we're never going to have to. And if we do, then whoa, wow, that'll be quite the year. And, you know, I'll say it right now. I'll put my foot down. If the Mariners are bad in 2011, if they are going to be bad, I want them to be so bad that we have to learn how to pronounce Sean Casmore. Because, you know, I don't want Josh Wilson again. I want another one.
Well, I said, I put the over-under on when's the first lineup with Casmar at second base and Josh Wilson at shortstop.
That would tickle all the parts of me that have never been tickled before.
Oh, man.
And you know what? If we went up against Cliff Lee that game, there's a chance we could win.
Yeah, there is.
It's a guarantee. And Justin Miller is more interesting, and obviously we don't have to talk about Justin Miller very much because it doesn't matter. He might make the bullpen as like the sixth or seventh guy. He's just a righty who's like, I mean, you might as well think of him like Sean Green, except instead of ground balls, he gets more strikeouts. He's just a guy who is notable in that he's a guy the Mariners signed who could end up with significant playing time next season. But what's interesting about these, and the Mariners will make a number of minor league free agent signings over the next several months leading into spring training, all of them will be interesting in some way or another. And the reason for that is nobody becomes a professional baseball player without at least one interesting quality about him, whether it's because he can throw really hard or he throws sidearm or he runs fast or he has power. Every single player will have a strength, some strength, and it's for that reason that we can make a long blog post about a John Parham or that other guy the Mariners signed last year who was a nobody, Preston Vansill.
Preston Vansill, yes. He's actually pretty interesting.
Is he?
Yeah. He got injured, and so he spent most of the year in extended rehab. But his numbers are actually quite good, although at very low levels. So watch out for him in 7 or 8 years. Well,
Preston Vansell just turned 24, and holy shit, he was good.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Well, in rookie ball, but still, yeah. All right, way to go, 24-year-old against minors. Like, literally minors. Like, I think you couldn't have had sex with them if you were... Well, anyway. The bigger point, and I'm sure this will turn into a blog post eventually because I've thought about it before, is that every single player is interesting for some reason or another, and it's for that reason that anybody could make it and why there's no guarantee that any given player could make it just because everybody's interesting. So just because this guy throws 94, well, you know what? A lot of people throw 94. It's just something to keep in mind.
Yeah, and if you're not interesting at all, well, then you're an Oakland Athletic.
Yeah, and wow, what a... I think there's... Maybe it's the stadium isn't the problem with the attendance. You guys think about this? It turns out, yeah, you know, if you want to see that team, you can just go down to a Xerox.
At that point, instead of watching the A's, you literally might as well just watch, like, video game baseball or... play baseball mogul, because it's about as white bread and boring.
And they just traded Roger Davis, who fit in somewhat with the outfield, but was a little too black, a little too fast. I think David DeJesus probably put them over the minority threshold. They had to get rid of Davis and his outstanding skill so that they could instead start a guy with zero outstanding skills, because Billy Beane, it turns out, hates his fans. He hates everything about people who watch the A's. That whole thing where Billy Beane was in the workout room during Dallas Braden's perfect game and he wasn't watching. Yeah, maybe take a hint that the guy most invested in the team isn't watching the team during a perfect game, maybe. I don't even know why we have an A's blog in the network. It should just be like a fucking Tetris Java app or something that people can go to and play Tetris, because you'll have a lot more fun playing Tetris. Anyway, what I was going to say, unless you have something to add
about the A's?
No, this isn't about the A's anymore. I'll give you a lead-off about Miller and Kazmar. I won't say the Mariners will have higher profile signings than this, obviously. These are just minor league free agents. But get used to guys like Miller, because the Mariners don't have much money to spend, and so this is probably going to be a more boring offseason. Matthew?
Right, and even if they did have money to spend, this also seems to be the sort of move that Jack Cerenzik makes by, you know, the Costco-sized tonnage. You mentioned John Parham last year, Preston Vansell, Jad Cordero, Mike Koplov, Yusmiro Petit. I mean, we could go on and on with just random people that you wouldn't even... Joe Nelson. I don't know. Random people that this team brought in at various points. Inevitably, almost all of them relievers. Because, mm-hmm. Wow, there's like four good relievers in baseball. And the rest of them just kind of float around in the ether and come and go and get traded and waived and released and become good 1 year and sign a massive contract, and then they're bad, and then whatever. But obviously utility players kind of float in the same sort of ooze. And that's a lot what we're going to see. We're going to see a lot of Tacoma depth, because that's what the team has money for, and also just because that's what Cerenzik seems to do all the time, is kind of restock Tacoma mm-hmm. with 35-year-olds. Who get like four innings to see if they're at all completely different than they've been in the last 12 years of their life before they're jettisoned.
By the way, John Barham lasted a month and a half. He signed with an Indy League team in April 12th. That's stupid.
Well, that's a load off my back. Steven Schell's gone too, by the way. He was picked up by the Royals.
Yeah, he was one of those guys. Last year we heard he had, like, undergone a complete change to his mechanics, because he had been a prospect earlier in his career, and then he overhauled his mechanics to throw differently, and the end result is that he caught the Royals' attention, which I guess means it didn't work.
Yeah. Hey, remember Mark Worrell? I was excited when we signed Mark Worrell.
Don't ruin it. let's lay off of that topic. Anyway, so the Mariners, the biggest, highest profile name we've heard so far, and granted, it's only been a couple of weeks of free agency, is that the Mariners are tied to Jeff Francis. And Jeff Francis would have been like a really exciting name, I don't know, 8 years ago when he was a top prospect. Since then, it turns out he doesn't throw very hard. He, like, the comparisons people have made and that we've made to Jason Vargas are, I think, pretty apt. He's Jason Vargas, except he had shoulder surgery, which I guess makes him, like, his surgery was a little higher on the body than Vargas's was that knocked him out for a year. And you can see the Mariners sign him. It's kind of, it would be almost kind of be a bummer if they did. Not because I think he's worse than David Pauly, but because I think he's going to cost millions of dollars. And the difference between Pauly and Francis just isn't really exciting to me. But who knows? Because Francis was pretty good last year, better than he's been in the past. Of course, there's the whole league adjustment to take into consideration. And the Mariners haven't signed him yet. But if that's the kind of guy the Mariners are targeting with like a handful of millions of dollars, I'd just, that's lame.
Yeah, it'd be a good time for all of you out there to not pay attention to baseball and get into something exciting like hockey. Watch hockey. It'll be over right when baseball season starts.
Senators who are currently losing. Oh, it's still just 4-0. Second period's gone better, I guess.
back to free agents and going back to the Oakland A's, we could talk about Adrian Beltre.
Yes.
And his curious apparent offer of 5 years, $64 million, exactly what he got with the Mariners after 2004 when he was 27. Now with the A's, the same amount of money in an economy, a baseball economy that really hasn't advanced from what it was back then in terms of what teams are paying on the market. And Adrian Beltre is 6 years older.
Yeah. It's almost like more teams have figured out that turns out this guy's good. I guess maybe people have realized that he's a really good defender. But what's most interesting to me is that 564 probably isn't going to get it done. And, of course, the Red Sox claim they're not going to go north of 4 years, $52 million, which I think it would be interesting to see if the Red Sox made that offer and the A's made their offer, whether Beltre would take the longer, more expensive one or the better chance of winning. Just because he's getting up there in years, he's only played in the playoffs once before, he got eliminated quickly. But what's scary to me is that Beltre is now has a long offer from one division rival and is considered a strong possibility to land with another division rival, while the third division rival could re-sign Cliff Lee. And it makes you realize, oh shit, the rest of this division is aggressive. The A's apparently woke up on a pile of money, like they had been sleeping for so long on this giant pile of money. And then they woke up kind of hungover because, you know, they had so many boring white guys. And they looked over and they're like, oh, man, look at all this money. We better spend it on a Japanese guy and Edwin Encarnacion and Adrian Beltre. And we'll get David DeJesus, too. And we're just going to fucking let's do crazy stuff because all of a sudden I'm Billy Bean and I decided I care about baseball for the first time in 3 years. So now the A's have money and they're aggressive. The Rangers have money. The Angels have always had money. They are only going to spend more. The Mariners are still a medium-high big market team. That was horribly put. Christ. They're going to spend a good amount of money on the team. They're not a small market team by any means, but the rest of the division is serious, and things aren't looking so good if the A's now are going to be spending money.
Maybe the A's found the money in that upper deck underneath all those tarps.
There's no seats here.
Oh, damn it. I would like to point out that if Adrian Beltre does sign with Oakland, so we all know the problems that he had hitting in Safeco Field and kind of what it did mentally, not being able to hit home runs there, et cetera, and so forth. And not to say that, you know, I have the end-all, be-all in the discussion, but I do have the park factors on stat corner that are broken down for left-handed batters and right-handed batters. And I think the methodology is pretty sound. And anyways, the home run factor for right-handers in Safeco is 84. Not surprising at all. The home run factor for right-handers in Oakland is 77. So, hey, Adrian.
Of course, if you look at Fenway, never mind.
It's 95. it's 95 with a double rating of like 3 trillion.
Yeah. So, never mind. So yeah, that would be fun for Adrian. Oakland is where he should end up. Then he'll get lots of attention and won't be at all frustrated that nobody's paying any attention to the team. I think he ends up elsewhere, but it's interesting to me to see Oakland throw that money at a player that I'm sure they know better than many other teams is very, very good. Of course, he is now in his 30s. So, you know, the Mariners got the good contract. The contract Beltre signs this year will be a worse contract. No matter how the Mariners one played out, that was a smart decision. And giving Beltre that same money or more now, I love him so much as a player.
I love Adrian Beltre too, but would I want the Mariners, regardless of their current financial situation in terms of the fact that they can't afford him, but would I want him on a 5-year, $64 million contract right now? No, I don't think so. I don't.
And it looks like it's going to be a seller's market this offseason in terms of free agents. I mean, you see, Joaquin Benoit gets 3 years. John Buck gets 3 years. Beltre is looking at 5. Lee's going to end up probably with 7. Who else is out there? Worth is probably going to get like 5 or 6. Crawford's going to get 35. It's just unbelievable. Well, it's not unbelievable because we've seen this happen before, but all of a sudden there's free agents, and it's a kind of thin class aside from, I think, relievers and first base DH types. But there's a lot of money there, and there's a little bit of inflation again. And it's not that Buck or Benoit or Beltre or anyone are bad players, but those extra years, I would always rather spend more money than more years because I don't like time myself. I mean, these guys are not on the right side of 30.
Right. Just to throw this out there because I came across, but I didn't know that Edwin Encarnacion was now in Oakland A.
Yeah,
so I went to confirm that. Yeah, they claimed him off waivers. And I came across this nugget that he suffered first and second degree burns to his face when a firecracker hit him in the jaw and exploded.
When?
This year.
When?
I don't know. Wait. But so apparently Robert now goes by Edward Encarnacion.
I understand that same thing happened to Ezequiel Estacio about 17 dozen times. I had no idea about that. I do know Encarnacion was claimed off waivers by the A's a couple days ago from the Blue Jays, and either him or Kevin Kuzmanoff is probably going to be non-tendered within a couple weeks.
Really? Kuzmanoff?
Yeah, because he's going to arbitration. Encarnacion's going to arbitration. There's no reason to have them both. I don't know why they got Encarnacion in the first place, but...
Isn't Kuzmanoff good?
Kuzmanoff is... Well, he's good, you know?
He's good. Yeah, but he's good.
Well, he didn't hit very well last year.
No, but he's good. He's good at fielding.
He
hits well enough.
To the choir here, because I know he's an average, slightly below average hitter with good defense. I like Kevin Kuzmanoff. I liked him in San Diego, but he's an unexciting player.
Yeah, very much so. But I'm just thinking in terms of, wow, if the A's waive him, the Mariners should jump all over that.
But then where would they put him?
Yeah, third base.
And also, he's looking for a raise from last year's $3.1 million, which he would shoot up to 4 or 5, most likely.
He deserves it.
It's the second year of arbitration. He deserves it.
He absolutely deserves it.
As little money as the Mariners have, do you want to spend what's left? A big chunk of it?
No. But it's certainly something they should explore, especially if they, you know, it allows them to be... It depends on information that I don't have, like what's the market out there, what's the trade market out there for Figgins?
Yeah, if they could move Figgins, then...
Actually, we keep hearing that, you know, they have chances to move Figgins, but they don't want to, but it's like, hey, if they can sign Kuzmanoff and then trade Figgins, that both, I think, doesn't cost them much or anything in production... And freeze salary room up.
Yeah. Kuzmanoff, of course, would kind of hate it here in the ballpark, but then he played in San Diego and Oakland, so it's not like it would be anything new. He's pretty much fucked his entire career. Like, hey, we know you're good, but you're going to get the Mike Cameron treatment for a while. You can go somewhere like Boston when you're 36. But I definitely, if the A's cut Kuzmanoff loose, I would definitely be interested. I think it would require the Mariners to ditch Figgins, which I think they... well, they can't do it with the Braves anymore because they just got Dan Uggla.
Yeah, but, you know, we've heard other things. I don't know.
Yeah, but the Braves were the strongest suitor. They're the ones who've made it.
Braves were certainly the ones, yeah.
Anyway, Kuzminoff, neat idea, boring, wouldn't sell any tickets in Seattle, but then, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't care. Of course, he had a 283 OBP last year, but, and he also doesn't walk. He's Jose Lopez, but with real power and defense. So he's not Jose Lopez.
Right.
That was miserable. Hey, let's move on. Let's move on to another topic. Do we have one?
Well, I was going to say, I was going to make a joke about Eric Chavez playing third base, or Chavez playing third base, but that's...
I understand Eric Chavez wants to come back.
Of course he does. I would want to have a back that didn't be terrible.
Nice. I mean, do we have any... So the MVPs are going to come out before our next podcast, but then is there... I mean, it should be Josh Hamilton, right? In the AL, and then probably Votto, or maybe Pujols in the NL?
I honestly don't know, because no Mariner is within... what's a really long distance from the MVP award. So it's not something that I've even bothered to... I certainly would probably see Josh Hamilton and be like, yeah, okay. I don't know. It seems to be the group answer, and I'm a little wary of that because of that reason, but I don't know who else might be there. Or
Hamilton's Cabrera. OPS was over one. He played a lot of center field. We can't quite quantify his defense, but we can assume he wasn't terrible. You know, it's funny, Adrian Beltre has an argument for the MVP, yeah. The most valuable player in the league.
Absolutely.
And you know who else
I think.
Pitchers.
Yeah. Yeah, they should.
Never get credit.
Yeah. Okay, now looking at it, Josh Hamilton's like far and away the best. That'd be quite a travesty if he didn't win it, and the NL should really be Votto. Or it'll be Votto or Pujols, and Ryan Zimmerman will continue to be completely overlooked.
Yeah. Poor guy. His prime is going to come when he's... Well, he might be... No, he's still only, what, 25? Holy shit. 25.
Yeah, he's young. His prime will come when he finally gets to leave the Nationals and he signs with, like, some other real team that gets media coverage.
It's funny, so does he have an extension? I'm going to check this real quick, because Ryan Zimmerman, he signed through 2013.
Yeah.
Okay, well, so he'll get some time with Strasburg and maybe with Harper. So the Nationals actually could have something, you know.
Well, he'll get like a year and a half with Strasburg and maybe a year with Harper, depending on how fast he moves. I mean, remember, Bryce Harper's, you know, 18.
Yeah.
So you can't really assume that he's going to come up any sooner than like 2-3 years.
If you were a Yankees
fan, Strasburg's out for the next year at least.
Yeah. If you're a Yankees fan, do you think time passes really slowly or really quickly? Because you can constantly be looking ahead to like, oh yeah, we're going to sign Ryan Zimmerman when he's a free agent in 2013, and we're going to get Felix, and we're going to sign Cliff Lee. Like, are they just... Is it Christmas Eve and they can't fall asleep and time just like trudges along, or are they just...
Well, no, because I think the winning, especially like the winning World Series kind of helps
the winning
keep
the
them in World Series.
What? I don't... What?
They won it last year.
What's the World Series? No, whatever. I'm just making shit up, but whatever. Your podcast.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, another AL MVP candidate? Not going to win, but a candidate? Shinsu Chu.
How's he a candidate?
Because he played a really, really good defense and he hit really, really well.
Well, I mean, I don't think anybody's going to vote for him.
No, nobody's going to vote. I'm just saying, statistically, there is an argument that Shinsu Chu will rank highly. Cliff Lee could and should rank highly. Adrian Beltre could rank highly. Felix could rank highly. Hey! Mariner representation in there. Some of it,
yeah.
Else.
I don't know. I don't think Shinsu Chu really belongs in that discussion.
I guess
not in terms
really
of the MVP. More in like the... You had a really, really good season, but in the same sort of sense that like Brett Gardner had a really good season.
Yeah, that's fair. You're never going to get MVP consideration because of your defense and a pretty good bat, I guess.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, by the way, the Mariners have had some pretty good players that we traded for Ben Broussard. Who is awesome.
Or players we passed on to draft Jeff Clement or Brandon Morrow.
Even the picks we thought we didn't fuck up, we fucked up.
Sure glad we picked Filippo Mon over Jason Hayward.
Well, actually. Oh, yeah.
Wait, no, I'm not. I'm upset.
Huh.
Shoot.
Well, the Mariners have won several almost World Series. If you think about the players they could have had.
Yeah. Yeah. And you don't want to get really into draft day retrospectives because, wow, that's just stupid. Because you could go back, you could create the all-time baseball's best team just by, you know, figuring out who you should have drafted 12 years ago.
Like, obviously, a lot of people point out, Willie Bloomquist is picked ahead of Albert Pujols, whatever, that's ridiculous. Yeah. I think the one case where it does make sense is with Tim Lincecum, because it seemed like such an obvious fit, you know? Because he's from Seattle, that what people knew, people didn't know, but they figured at the time, a lot of people were in Lincecum's camp. The Mariners were well aware of the fact that Lincecum was very good, so you could make that argument, but all the other ones,
I just like to say that the two that I make, I don't really want to call them arguments, but the one, and they were the, this isn't even me second guessing, because I was first guessing this. I said I wanted Lincecum like 6 months before the draft. Mm-hmm. And I continued right up to the point where we were picking, and I said I wanted Lincecum. And I said, I wasn't like upset when we drafted Oman over Jason Hayward, because I liked Oman over kind of the other crap that it seemed like we might draft, because who knows, we might draft a reliever, which no, it turns out that was next year. But I did say at the time that it was like kind of okay with Oman, but wow, I kind of think that 3 years from now, remember this was 2007, 3 years from now, I feel like we're going to be regretting that we didn't draft Jason Hayward. And man, I got the player and the timeline right. And again, it was one of those, like, you know, Oman was 11, 10 or 11, and Hayward was 14. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like, yeah, it was,
Doesn't that feel good?
It does. It's right up there with the David Wright, who was like the next pick or two picks after Garcia Parra or Tui. I can't remember which one. I think it was Tui. Hey, you remember who's still on our team? Matt Tui Asisopo.
I'm doing a little search right now. Let's see, who do we got? Oh, we got John Mayberry in 2002. We didn't sign him.
And with the compensation pick for not signing John Mayberry, we drafted Adam Jones.
Yes.
Who we then traded for Eric Bedard. Whose option we just declined. And who we might re-sign again for the fourth year. So can you imagine that if we re-sign Eric Bedard, it's his fourth season with the Mariners?
Yeah, that's absolutely insane. He's doing a great job of staying behind the cloak.
I mean, wow.
By the way, here are some players chosen after Jeff Clement. Ryan Zimmerman, shortly thereafter. Ryan Zimmerman, Ryan Braun, Ricky Romero, Troy Tulowitzki, Cameron Maybin, Andrew McCutchen, Jay Bruce, and that's like the first half of the round. And the second half, obviously, it dropped off. But, man, there was a lot of ability in that draft that we didn't get.
Yeah. I think I remember really liking Troy Tulowitzki because of his name.
Yeah, I mean, what did we know 5, 6 years ago?
Yeah, we didn't.
And of course,
obviously, looking back on it, I don't think Jeff Clement was a bad pick.
No, I quite liked him. I remember in 2006, of course, we got Mora, but so many of us wanted Andrew Miller instead of Lincecum, and of course, Miller's been a pile of shit. Just hoping to make it as a reliever now.
Yeah, it's a crapshoot. That's what the draft is.
The first two picks in the 2006 draft have both made the majors, and they both have negative WAR.
Which one was 06? Is that the Hoshover?
Hoshaver and Greg Reynolds, who for some reason
was Greg Reynolds.
Second. second overall ahead of Evan Longoria.
Yeah. Oh, man, the Rockies could be good. Can you imagine Tulowitzki and Longoria on the left side of their infield?
Wow. Instead of Melvin Mora.
Yeah. Although I wonder if they had drafted Evan Longoria, if they still would have, you know, signed him into that same sort of oh my god contract. But Can you imagine Evan Longoria in Colorado? The offensive numbers that he would put up, which would then draw more attention to how good he is, which would draw more attention to his defense, which would just further prove how amazingly good he is. Instead, he's kind of, you know, I mean, I think people know him because he plays for the Rays, and the Rays are popular enough now, at least statistically. But I don't think people really appreciate how good Evan Longoria actually is.
No.
They're just like, oh, yeah, he's good. But, man, he's like a borderline MVP candidate.
Yeah. And his Baseball Reference gives him the highest WAR in the American League for whatever that's worth.
I don't think it's worth a lot.
Yeah. But anyway, I mean, he had an 8.79 OPS. He plays good defense. He's healthy. He's young.
Yeah.
He's locked up. And, of course, you do have that MVP argument about does your contract matter. And Evan Longoria gets points for his contract, I think, because it makes him more valuable.
I would agree.
So, thumbs up.
Depending on how you want. Yeah. It's just, wow. What? How things could be so radically different just based on drafting.
Yeah. I mean, people say baseball's a game of inches, and it's, I mean, if you do stop and think about how close teams come from things, I mean, it is unbelievable that things could be so different just because of one tiny little change. Evan Longoria, if he had went to Colorado, would change so much. Who knows if this year's playoffs would have looked like, or 3 years ago. The entire landscape would have been different just because of one guy going one pick earlier.
Kind of blows your mind, doesn't it?
Kind of does blow your mind.
And that's why you shouldn't get upset about things. Come on, people. Just, you know, relax.
Take a pill. God.
Or, you know, chill in some form that's not in a pill.
Yeah. Smoke. Can't wait for those jokes next year. All year. Hey, you know what the Mariners should do? Smoke. Are you smoking yet? Yes, they've been smoking for 86 games. It's July.
Fister? I barely even know her.
Fister,
hilarious.
I knew her well enough to put my fist in her. I did know her. That's why I fisted her. Because we're in a committed relationship.
Are you guys getting that we're mocking you yet? These jokes are not funny. They're not
funny. Rose, I barely knew her.
Anytime you have the urge to make a Fister pun joke that's just that, you really should just make a Carlos Silva fat joke instead, and then at least that's against our stated rules, and we can ban you for it.
Langer hands? That's not my fetish.
All right, you need to stop now.
I'll show you some Chris Woodward.
Doesn't even make sense.
So I decided I wanted to fist her, and now my genitals, Erica Burns.
That also doesn't make sense.
Why would my genitals burn if I... Never mind, this is...
Yeah, it's... I think you got the pronoun wrong there.
Maybe I... Oh, you know, I could explain it, but that's just disgusting. I think our podcast is over.
Yeah, I think that's probably enough.
Fun little treat for those of you who listened all the way through. Disgusting jokes.
It's what happens when we have to talk for an hour and we run out of material.
Farts.
That's never funny.
So until what? Next week? Maybe not next week because that's a holiday week, but we'll see. If not next week, then soon thereafter. Until next time, listeners.
Bye-bye.